Welcome to End Time Talk Radio, where the truth is usually stranger than fiction. The purpose of these shows are not to scare you, but to prepare you, because what you don't know could hurt you. The word says in Hosea 4:6, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." Thank you for joining us. My name is Julie, and here is the host of the show, Barry Meyer.
On today's show, we have a roundtable discussion. Rob Skiba, SeedTheSeries.com, Stan Dale, StanDale.com, Minister Fortson, MinisterFortson.com, and L.A. Marzulli, L.A.Marzulli.net. He shows up about an hour into the interview. Special thanks to Stan Dale. Thank you for recording the show, because we had two recordings here going and both failed. So thank you, Stan. I really appreciate this. And the audience, I know you'll enjoy this two-hour show.
I got held up in the briars, and that's when I looked up and saw it. And it made no noise. The trees didn't move, or the leaves blew away. Ricky Soro, Stephen to the Lights. I went into sort of a shocked tailspin as I realized that the abductions were real. I said to myself, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God," repeatedly for about 6 months. Dr. David Jacobs. They always communicated to me telepathically. An idea would come into my mind to go out and take pictures, or they would have me start drawing symbols, which was some type of language I had no knowledge of. They called it light language. The alien interviews is a hard-hitting exposé conducted with 17 people who have had direct contact with the so-called extraterrestrial presence. The alien interviews is now available in paperback for only $10. Get informed, as UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away. Go to lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net. Pick up your copy of The Alien Interviews, www.lamarzulli.net.
Today on End Time Talk Radio, we have a three-panel roundtable guest. Now we have Rob Skiba, Dante Fortson, and Stan Dale. Now, Rob Skiba's website is seedtheseries.com. Minister Fortson is ministerfortson.com. And Stan Dale is standale.com. Definitely go out there and support them. Now, Rob, we got you on the first here. Okay. Tell us what's going on. 2 or 3 minutes. What's going on new in your ministry?
Okay. Well, as far as what's going on in the world, I'm not really up to date because I took a much-needed vacation for 2 weeks, visited my family up in New England for 2 weeks, and have been playing catch-up ever since I got back. So I really have no clue what's going on in the world at the moment. But in my world, as you mentioned, I'm working on a TV series called Seed. My website, seedtheseries.com. In the time that I was gone, I got a very interesting phone call, Thanksgiving Day, as a matter of fact. A couple months back, I had produced two DVDs for my lecture series, Mythology and the Coming Great Deception and the Mount Hermon Roswell Connection. And I had passed those off to Gary Stearman. You know, they say you need to have that elevator speech ready. Sure. It's true. I was in an elevator for just a couple minutes, going from the third floor down to the bottom floor of a hotel, and ran into Gary Stearman. So it was kind of like, here's a DVD. You know, had the elevator speech ready. He watched it, got excited about it, had me on his show. I went on his show, did two 10-minute daily updates with him and two half-hour interviews, and after those aired, I got an email back from Bob Ulrich. He said that they had one of the best responses they've ever had to a show, and we sold, gosh, about 2,500 DVDs in 45 days.
Wow.
It went crazy, and I've been getting a lot of email from different people that have watched it. Well, I had met another guy and had given him the DVDs, and he finally got a chance to watch it on Thanksgiving Day. He called me and said, "You've just made my Thanksgiving." I said, "Oh, really?" And told me why, because he had done some similar research. Anyway, this guy is very well connected with a lot of people that he's helped launch various ministries, businesses, and movie productions. And there's a team of filmmakers that have made a mass exodus out of Disney, because they're not happy with where Disney's been going, and they are Christians. And they are starting their own movie production company called Dream Vision, which is going to be located about 20 minutes from my house. And some of these guys have gotten wind of what I'm doing, and they're very excited about it. So today, as a matter of fact, I was supposed to have a meeting with some potentially huge investors that have expressed considerable interest in launching Seed. It didn't happen today, but it's just been postponed. So hopefully that's going to happen sometime later this week, so you can keep that in prayer for me if you would. But we're very excited about it over here because our vision for Seed is to plant seeds that will enable people to understand the times we're living in and to walk in the power of the kingdom that comes only through a relationship with Jesus Christ. And Seed, we pitch it as Lost meets Battlestar Galactica wrapped up in an X-File. So it's going to have the mystery and intrigue of Lost combined with the sci-fi appeal to Battlestar, but of course the alien conspiracy type themes that are in the X-File, all written from a biblical worldview and served on a secular palette. So essentially what that means is all the stuff that researchers like Dante and Stan and L.A. and Tom Horn and Steve Quayle and a whole bunch of others, I'm trying to package all that stuff into a sci-fi series and use their materials as subject matter to deliver in the show in order to reach a mass audience. And it looks like we're closer than ever to finally seeing that come about.
It's exciting what God's doing in your ministry now. The date today is December 12th of 2011. Dante, what is God doing with your ministry?
Well, much like Rob, I've kind of jumped off into film recently, and we were working on a series called The Fall Retribution, and it got put on hold. One of the people in the series actually was on X Factor, and then we had other people doing other things, and so it kind of just got put on hold. One of our actors got accepted into a film school in Paris. But shortly after that, after we postponed the filming for the series, I called a friend of mine who had been working on The Fall with me and my partner Stanford. And I told her about this idea I had. And so about 48 hours later, I wrote the script and sent it over to her and sent it to the other girl, Brittany Vasquez, who was in The Fall as well. And she loved it. And so she forwarded it on to Michael O'Neill, and he's an actor as well, and he loved it. So what he did was he shifted a lot of his stuff around so he could play this character. So over the last couple of weeks, we managed to put together a budget, wardrobe, everything, location. We have releases, and we start filming. It's actually a feature film. We're going to start filming in January, the first week of January. And we have about 6 days of straight filming scheduled, and this new project should be finished. It's a Christian film, but much like Rob, we're trying to put it out there to a secular audience, and not necessarily, you know, preach to the choir. And so yeah. If you look on my Facebook page, I actually uploaded a few pictures the other day from the very first meeting that we all had, and you can see kind of the look on their faces after they read the script, but everybody loved it. Everybody's on board. And then for next month, January 2nd, my new book, Beyond Flesh and Blood, The Ultimate Guide to Angels and Demons, will be released. And it's a book really about spiritual warfare by looking at angels and demons, seeing what they're capable of, what their origin is, where they come from, looking into some of the church traditions about angels versus what the Bible says. So that's really what's going on new in the ministry. Other than that, I've just been working on other stuff. The Days of Noah is doing really, really well, book sales wise. So I'm just continuing.
It looks like we had a little bit of Skype problem right there.
Yeah, it looks like we lost him.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead. Stan, what does God do in your ministry?
We lose Stan too?
I don't know. Stan, are you there?
Not quite as exciting as what Dante's was, or Rob's, but you know, no movies in production at the moment. I did appear on a segment or two with L.A. on the Watchers 3 DVD that's now released. I'm also learning how to do e-books, and I'm going to put an e-book version of the Vindicator Scrolls up here in the new year. And maybe get the second paper on gravity and the true nature of it, or closer to the true nature, let's say, than we currently enjoy. I've been promising that for almost a year, but I just haven't had time with everything else to get that done. It's a very interesting paper, and it fits in with a lot of the UFO situation, explaining pole shifts and things that are happening inside the planet that people aren't even aware of. And it gives a very good visual animated model. Even though it's an e-book, in the PDF form, I can put videos into it so they can just click on it and see the animations. I find that works a lot better than putting equations in. Other than that, I think basically I'm just trying to catch up.
Yeah. What are you seeing in Earth changes and different things that are going on, like with the Canary Islands, Oklahoma, and that?
Well, there are a number of increases. Holly keeps the records on that, you can go to our website and see that. She updates them when she gets a chance from the websites to show what the current earthquakes are, and also to show things like how USGS is fudging the results to make it look not so bad. But we've had a lot of larger earthquakes here in the last 2 or 3 years, and these Richter 9s are starting to get serious. So because I don't have the naval data, I haven't had in probably, 7 years now, I guess, I can't be as accurate about looking at where they're going to occur or the magnitude of it. But we've certainly been watching the Canary Islands and the La Palma and the El Hierro situation, which is an island 57 miles south of the ridge that we're all watching, because if it fractures for whatever reason and drops into the sea, that's going to be rather disastrous for the East Coast and the dwellers thereon in the United States, and also for Great Britain and some of South America. That one we're keeping tabs on. We also have other people that are watching it for us in the Spanish-speaking world who shoot us emails when something comes up that looks like we better have a look at it. It looks like that whole area over there, the ridge that formed the islands, is starting to have little quakes here and there in a line moving up to the north, which is toward La Palma. So that La Palma event may be closer than we think. There are some, one geologist, a lady, that reckons that the splash won't be as big, but there still will be a splash if that whole side falls into the sea. That you're talking trillions of tons of stuff dropping in. The other things are the New Madrid Fault, the quakes in Oklahoma, which is probably due to fracking, the looking for oil and gas, or the earthquakes in Arkansas, all moving to the east toward the New Madrid, are a concern. I think that we're seeing the early stress release signs of a major quake in the New Madrid area, whether it be up in the north or whether it be right straight across from Oklahoma and Arkansas. I don't know. We're just having to watch the data like everybody else. And the other thing is, we're still kind of sitting on top of something with Yellowstone. We've had leaks from official bodies connected with it that have been telling us that the government has put a lid on it, a security lid, and made every one of the geologists that are monitoring Yellowstone sign non-disclosures and National Secrets Act. They go to prison and get fined $10,000 or whatever if they let on what's happening there. And by a strange set of circumstances, we got the information given to us inside that group. And there's something really serious going on there as well. They're putting in huge, huge data lines that are running out of state into some supercomputers to keep an eye on everything happening on the northwest part of the Yellowstone caldera. So there are a number of things that we're having to look at, and we get so many emails from people that have other things they want us to look at that there's just not enough hours in the day. The Planet X situation, is it real or not? What is that object that moved across the sun in the stereo A and B photos or videos that Lynn has, L.A. has on his Watcher 3 DVD, and we talk about? Where is the mystery planet if it's there? And I've got a new set of equations and graphs for that, too, because I've been able to predict where planets need to orbit around our sun by a formula. And there certainly is an orbit out there that may have a planet or more planets in it at about 240 times the distance of the Earth from the sun. So all those things, are kind of running around in my brain in my spare time.
Sure. Well, you know, go ahead, guys. Just talk as you feel led.
Sten, I maybe you've done some research in this. It's something that just recently came to my attention as a result of a blog that Sharon Gilbert wrote concerning Luke 21:11, which talks about great earthquakes shall be in diverse places, and famines and pestilences, and fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven. She focused in on the fearful sights part because it's the Greek word phobotron, which apparently is used nowhere else in Scripture. It's only used in that one place. And she speculates, based on the definition of that particular Greek word and how we use words like phobia for fear, but tron specifically for things of a computerized or mechanical nature, and was speculating that phobotron, or fearful sights in the heavens, could be a biblical reference to UFOs.
Well, it certainly could be. I know that a lot of things we're being told about that are possibly going to affect us, you know, meteor impacts or asteroid impacts and UFO landings, that kind of stuff, is creating fear in the population, and that is growing as the world economy is failing and various other things are stressing people out. And when they say in the Bible that men's heart will fail them for fear, I think it's like stress, you know, stressing over what might happen, as opposed to the actual thing happening, that a lot of people just die from the anticipation of it. Now, phobotron, I think that we're going to see a lot more of the UFO sightings, and if you've been watching the MUFON reportings this year, we've had a lot all over the world.
Yeah, we have.
It's increasing, and they're getting more and more photographable, you know, what the evidence is looking a lot better. It's not just a little light in the sky. We're starting to see shapes. Are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got a white noise.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. The thing that I think that Rob and I and probably all of us have been looking at is, from the biblical point of view, about these extraterrestrials. Where did they come from? Are they really just, you know, planet hoppers or star hoppers or whatever? And, you know, how does that fit into the Bible? As we all know, before the Great Flood, there were super beings here from the heavens. And I think the way I see it is that we have concentric universes, you know, like universes parallel to each other in all axes, which makes them concentric. And that these beings live in, you know, second heaven or third heaven or whatever levels there are. There's at least three, maybe seven. And there's a layer of heaven beneath us, you know, in dimension. Now, these extraterrestrials would be probably more apropos to say extra dimensionals coming down from the heavens, like the Watchers, the original set of Watchers. Then there were the Watchers of 300 that made it with the women here and produced the Nephilim, which was not a good thing in the sight of the Creator, God, the Elohim. And so those 300 were locked up inside the earth into a dark prison. Yet their influence can be passed across that dimensional area up to the surface to living beings, and probably some of their offspring with the DNA code that will allow them to be manipulated by these 300 doomed but sentenced and locked up Watchers. Now, I think what we ought to be doing now is shifting the focus from little green men from Mars to say, wait a minute, those are extraterrestrials you're talking about, but aren't they really subterrestrials or subterranean beings that, you know, that have come from underneath? And if you look at a lot of the UFO sightings, I mean, like William Cooper and Behold a Pale Horse. I talked to Bill a long time ago before he died, and when he was writing the book, and he was telling me about being on the deck of his ship in the Navy and watching a huge UFO, a saucer shape. The light of it was ahead of the ship off to the starboard side, I believe it was, come rushing up through the surface of the sea and taken off in the air, you know, zip gone. So it came from underneath the ship in the water. And if you look at reports of, like, the Chinese and the Japanese in their history, their culture, they have drawings and writings about, in one case, a woman who came up out of an egg shape out of the water mm-hmm. from underneath. And, again, out of the water. If you look at the ship log, the diary of Christopher Columbus, he had lights in the water following him, too, when he was getting close to the Americas. Underneath the water. The Bermuda Triangle, the Devil's, the Sea of Japan's Devil's Triangle, that's over close to where the ancient records show people coming up out in those egg-shaped things. So when you look at all these together, there are a lot of these things that are from underneath the sea. So somewhere, I think there's one or more doorways that can be opened to a certain level down. I don't know whether the Watchers, the 300 that are locked up, can get out, but there's something going on underneath, and we can't get down there. A lot of the little statuettes that you see on the History Channel things talking about ancient aliens, they say, oh, look at these, they've got spacesuits on, you know, because the little statuettes have what looks like a visor or a glass cage in front of the eyes and then a helmet and paraphernalia that looks like a spacesuit. And Holly and I were talking the other night, well, wait a minute. If you have a base on the bottom of the ocean or way down deep where it's really heavy pressure, when you come up to the surface, it's going to be to you like going in outer space because you're all pressurized for the heavy depth. So you'd have an environmental suit, you're like a diving suit, for the air coming up, not down. And you look at those things, and so many of them really look like our diving suits of old. You know, the steel helmet jobbies with the little view holes in the side and the front. So, yeah, that I think there's a lot of stuff that Rob and I have talked about that does indicate we ought to be focusing on that and bringing people's attention back down to Earth and seeing that these things are here. They're not coming from out there somewhere. They're locked in here. This is Satan's territory until Christ comes back to take it back from him. But so he's in control of this in the air and all his minions that are locked up and those that are being used by them on the surface. These are important.
If I may interject, Tom Horn and Steve Quayle were on Friday night, and they were talking about a ship that was out there by Mercury. Have you heard anything about that, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I saw the images, and those are several years old. I'm not sure. That'd be an awful big ship, but it's possible. You see, just because these beings are kind of headquartered here on Earth at the moment for the last great battle against the Messiah, doesn't mean that they can't go elsewhere in the solar system and do things. I mean, look back in Egypt in the times of the pharaohs when they had those, and in South America as well, when they had those little model airplanes that they've been reconstructing. They were like gliders. They didn't have motors or anything on them, but they had glider paraphernalia. And if you look at those, that's low tech by comparison to an anti-gravity flying saucer. So you say, if the gods, back in those days, what they called the gods, had that kind of technology and impressed the Egyptians and the South Americans and stuff with these things that glided through the air and perhaps made loud, thunderous noises like the Indian subcontinent. They talked about the fire-breathing things that came down from the sky with the gods and the battles between them. That's all rocketry and propulsion stuff that we use today, but that was several thousand years ago. So maybe those beings here on the Earth that have been locked in here are somehow influencing humans to develop technology, and some that are coming down from the heavens, just visiting and going back up with Satan, are creating technology here on Earth using Earth materials so they can build a technological army to fight the Messiah when he does get here, because they've been getting better and better, and they're ahead of us by heaps, several thousand years, as far as having the hardware built and tested and knowing how it works. So I think the old quote-unquote extraterrestrial or alien encounters were these beings that are here already, and they were developing infrastructure for what is going to come about now. And they gradually went up to anti-gravity, which is still ahead of most of what the human technology is, even though we do understand how anti-gravity works now and can make craft to use it. So that's what I think we should be looking at.
What are your thoughts on this, Dante? Maybe we lost
Well, him? I've been doing a lot of... Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Sure. Okay. right. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of looking into the Merkaba lately. And one of the things I find interesting is the appearance of the Merkaba in the Bible. And it's always translated as chariot. And it seems to be this flying vehicle. And what's interesting about it is it really starts to resemble the descriptions of modern-day UFO sightings. And so what I decided to do was do some more research and find out if there were any depictions of it. And I actually did find several depictions of the Merkaba. And it's amazing because the way it looks, if you were to see it from a distance, it would look like a shining craft in the sky. And it's my personal opinion that the fallen angels can develop technology. I agree with much of what Stan said. And I believe that these fallen angels can develop technology and that their technology is way ahead of our own. And I do believe that they are influencing some of the technologies that we're seeing here. But I also think it's important that we kind of, I don't know, tread lightly on the subject because, a lot of it's just speculation. There's a lot of evidence throughout history and different mythologies, that is exactly the case, that they're helping develop technologies. But I think sometimes we can get way, way out if we do too much speculating. But I agree with much of what he said. I think that we need to look closer to the Earth and not necessarily out in space. I think it's the out in space that throws a lot of people off because then they start to get confused and think that we're actually referring to aliens or extraterrestrial beings from other planets. And again, I agree that I think that they're extra-dimensional or interdimensional beings that come from heaven, and now they're trapped down here on Earth. And I'm trying to be careful with my words because I want to be clear that it is my position that these are indeed fallen angels and that they are influencing mankind in some sort of way. And I don't believe that we need to look out there for them. I believe they are right here on Earth with us, just able to, I don't know if they turn invisible or move to another dimension when we don't see them. I have no idea where they are when we don't see them. But I think I agree with Stan that they are indeed right here on Earth and we don't have to look out into space for them.
Well, I agree. Rob, what are your thoughts on some of this that's been said?
Yeah, I agree with both Stan and Dante. There's something that I've been studying, looking at. I was talking to Stan earlier that I've really been diving into four books in parallel. Of course, the Bible, Genesis in particular, but paralleling it with the Book of Enoch, Joshua, and Jubilees. And pairing those four books up together, you see it paints a very big picture of everything that we're talking about and fills in a lot of gaps and details. And one of the things I found really interesting was in Enoch chapter 10, it talks about the first generation of Nephilim that were produced by the watchers mating with women were to kill each other off and that they would live no more than 500 years. Shortly after that, the watchers were to be buried for 70 generations. Well, Psalm 90, verse 10 defines a generation as 70 years. So it's simple math, 70 times 70, right? That gives you 4,900 years. Well, looking at that timeline, the best I can come up with is it seems like what I call the Genesis 6 experiment, which is when the 200 watchers landed on Mount Hermon in the days of Jared, was in 3550 BC. So, of course, you go forward 500 years from there and you land at 3050 BC. But right before that, the Mayan calendar shows up at 3114 BC. And this time period right around 3100 BC to 3000 BC is very interesting because first you have the death of Adam. Adam dies first. About 25 years later or so, you have the end of that first generation of Nephilim, 500 years. Then you have the rapture of Enoch. Enoch is taken up right around that time period too. So you got the end of the burial of the watchers happening at roughly 3050 BC. So give or take 50 years, let's just round it off. You go forward 4,900 years from that time frame and you end up in the early 1900s. And so if the Book of Enoch is to be taken seriously, it says that those watchers that will be buried under the sands of the earth will be buried for 70 generations. 70 generations, 70 years per generation, 4,900 years, early 1900s. Well, if that's true and they were released in the early 1900s, it might explain a whole lot of things about the 20th century. I mean, we went from horse and buggy for thousands of years to all of a sudden flying machines and cars and spaceships and computers and all sorts of this massive explosion of technology happened in the 20th century. Well, that could be explained by the release of these watchers. You also have a couple of very interesting things taking place with the, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right, but the Amalantra working, I believe that's how you pronounce it, that took place in March of 1918, where Aleister Crowley did a series of occult magical workings that produced a creature that he called Lamb, and his drawing of Lamb looks very much like what we would call an alien gray. Well, that's also right around the time World War I starts. Then you got World War II after that. So we've got two world wars to take place in the 20th century, and you've got L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons doing the Babylon working, I believe it was in 1976. So there's all these occult rituals happening. There's this explosion of technology, and there's two world wars. You might even say three world wars if you believe that we're, in fact, in World War III right now, happening in the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century. So it would seem to me that those beings that created and did the Genesis 6 experiment are indeed out and about. And looking at some of the other ancient texts, you see in the Epic of Gilgamesh, Tablet 11, says that the gods were afraid of the great flood weapon, and they withdrew, and some of them went up into the heaven of Anu. Among them was Ishtar. And so this is where I believe you get a lot of these, what the History Channel talks about, ancient aliens that possibly went out into space, maybe coming back with Planet Nibiru, if you believe in that, and Planet X and all that stuff. So, yeah, I believe they're everywhere. I believe they're interdimensional. I believe that they're coming up in, as USOs, unidentified submersible objects, as Stan was talking about. There's plenty of records about that, as Stan said. Christopher Columbus talked about it, a lot of other people. So I definitely believe that all these things are adding up to what Jesus said it was, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be at the coming of the Son of Man. And we're going to see an increase in fallen angel activity. And I believe a lot of that is manifesting in these UFO apparitions and different things that we're seeing out there. I did a 10-minute montage of UFO coverage just in mainstream news coverage. It's 8 minutes long, just in the last couple of years. And after I finished that 8-minute montage of UFO sightings covered by mainstream news in the last couple of years, there have been at least that many since I made that video in the last 8 months or so. So it's definitely increasing. As L.A. Marzulli likes to say, UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away. And I think we need to get educated on this thing so that, as L.A. likes to also say, we can rebuke first and ask questions later.
Yeah. Rob.
Barry, do you mind?
Sorry, go on.
No, you guys be
free. I was going to say, I think Rob is onto something. And I, in my book, As the Days of Noah Were, I kind of, you know, touched on the same thing, the 70 generations of the Watchers being locked up. My date that I started at was a little bit different than his. I started with a date of 2880 to 2900 BC, around in there, which put the release at about 2018 to 2028. But the dating isn't really important. We were both on the same page, looking at the same, really, information. So I guess it just depends on where you start counting from. But I think one thing we need to do is, it's my personal opinion, I think we need to expand our reference past the 200 watchers from Genesis 6, because there are other fallen angels that are with Satan. And a lot of the times I think we forget about those and focus on the ones that were locked up. And we don't talk about the ones that were not locked up, because we still have, all throughout history, people talking about the gods or the Kachina or the Starmen. And if these beings were locked up until the 1900s, that means that the other fallen, there are more fallen angels out there still carrying on these sorts of things. But the Bible doesn't tell us, you know, whether they were bound as well, or if they were allowed to roam free. And if we go to Revelation 9, when these locusts are released, and the reason I mention this is because some people do believe that these locusts are the same angelic entities from before the flood. People have differing opinions, But if they are the same, there are a lot more than 200 to 300 released from the bottomless pits. And so, yeah, there's 200 million of them. So I'm thinking there may be a lot more going on than our current frame of reference, and that's me included, because it just hit me as you were talking, Rob, that there seems to be a lot more angels that were involved throughout history. Just my personal opinion, for them to have to release that many angels from the abyss or that many demons from the abyss.
Yeah, I know you and I differ on this a little bit, but we're basically saying some of the same things. But when you look at the Watchers, I believe the Book of Enoch and some of the other extra-biblical texts talk about the fact that the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim are the demons. That there's a difference between demons and fallen angels. Fallen angels are fallen angels. Demons are the disembodied spirits of the fallen angels. And I believe it's the Book of Jubilees that talks about 90% of the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim were locked up in Tartarus, or in the abyss. And 10%, I think it's Mastema, if I remember right, was the name of the fallen angel that was partnered with Lucifer, I guess. He basically petitioned God for 10%, according to the ancient text, to remain on Earth. So that could be another way of looking at it. Whether he's right, whether I'm right, it doesn't really matter. There's a whole lot of scary stuff that's going to come out of the abyss in the last days. And, man, I don't think most people are even prepared to go there, because unfortunately churches aren't talking about it. So why I appreciate what you guys are talking. I appreciate the show that you're doing this, Barry, to help get that word out.
Thank you.
Let me add to that, to what Dante said and what you've said, Rob. The release of those demonics, those subterranean prisoners that are down there, is only part of what's happening. It says that we'll be able to see them as we get closer. The veil will get thinner, and we'll be able to see them. And that's going to scare the hell out of a lot of people, really, literally. Now, what I see is something is happening with the dimensional levels of the heavens. Because you look at the time of Noah, for instance, and Adam. God walked and created Adam. He walked with him in the cool of the day in the garden. And he walked with Noah and talked with him physically. He was right there. Hi, how you going, Noah? Hi, God. Yeah, everything's fine. And then you get up to the time of Moses, now thousands of years later, and God says to Moses, look, you can't look at me directly. I know you want to see what I look like, but I can hide you in this crevice here in the mountain here, so that you won't be hurt by my presence and your body won't be destroyed or damaged. And I'll project my shadow up onto this cloud so that you can see my image on that cloud. Now, why was his presence so energetic at that time that it would hurt Moses just being that close and looking at him? When, you know, in generations before with Noah and with Adam and with Elijah, you could do it. You could be close and see him. You could be in the chariot of fire, but not later. Now then, after the time of Moses, you don't see, you know, and after the time of Jesus, you don't see God appearing and talking to anybody here. And you look in the Revelation toward the end of the book, and it's talking about a new heaven and a new earth will replace the old. The old will pass away in a fiery heat. You know, the whole universe that we know at our level will change, will be consumed. So there's something going on to compress the multidimensional levels around us. All these things means that the veil down at our level is getting thinner, and we are going to start seeing these ghostly demons and stuff, even though they might not be able to touch us yet. We'll see them. That's just really weird.
So Stan, do you believe that's essentially what all the New Agers and everybody's talking about, with some kind of new enlightenment or opening or awakening or whatever happening next year?
It could very well be. I did debate years ago, probably 30 years ago, with a fellow from the Findhorn Foundation who was down in Australia giving lectures to one of the Theosophical societies, and they're allowing for the exodus, the disappearance, shall I say, of a large number of people whose vibrations aren't at the right level in the age that we're coming to. Everything's going to change, and those people are going to be sent back to other incarnations and other planets to get their vibes right, so they can be incarnated here again and catch up with the rest of all these Theosophical, you know, New Age guys. And we looked at each other across the audience, because we were different sides of the audience debating, And I knew, I could see in his eyes, I swear the devil was in him. And we looked at each other, and I said, the rapture's coming, and we say the rapture's what's taking those people. And, you know, we're going to fight. We're going to fight. You and I are going to fight, and all that are on my side against also on your side, and you're going to lose. And he just smiled, and, you know, they're allowing for the rapture right there. I mean, they're saying that it's going to happen. There's going to be a big change. Real soon, the vibes are going to change, and all those are going to disappear that aren't right. So I think 2012, 2013, somewhere in that time period, that we are going to see something spectacular.
You know, this is just an offshoot to concur with what you were saying, Stan. Back in July, I was out in what they call Pelton Creek area, which is 100 miles west of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And we were out there camping, and I literally heard like a banshee scream. My wife heard it too, and some other friends. And it was about a mile away. When I walked back up towards the fire, which was 100 foot away, I heard something clicking like rocks, and I knew it wasn't any campers. They're a mile away. What I'm saying is that I believe that, like you're saying, that veil is becoming thinner, and we're seeing those things happen.
Hey, what about this sound that people are hearing in Russia and stuff? You've heard that in baseball games, of that weird moaning sound. Have you heard that on the internet?
No.
Oh. Yeah, it's not just in Russia. There's a guy, I'm trying to remember his name now, Mark Jobe, I believe, he's in Canada. Yeah, he's also a filmmaker, and he's trying to do a documentary on it. He's been hearing it like crazy wherever he is in Canada.
I don't know whether it's transdimensional sound coming through, or, you know, the veil kind of creating that audible sound, or whether it's you know, harp-type devices playing at each other all across the planet, because the Chinese got it, the Russians got it, we've got it. We've got, you know, harp installations all over the planet. And if they aren't in concert, they will have a beat pattern between them. And I'm wondering if that's it. But whatever it is, it's just eerie. It's just spooky sounding.
Well, you know, and I'll just interject this real quick. And also where we live, 30 miles west of us, there's a place called Vitavu, the Apaches, or the Arapahoes, called it Earthborn Spirits, and there is tons of rocks around there that are the size of small houses that have been placed up there. And one guy said it looks like a giant baby was playing with blocks, and it does. I'll send you a link sometime tonight here, Stan, to look at it.
All right, all right. You know, look, I'm sure we've all seen most of these videos and stills of the Machu Picchu rocks, you know, the how it looked like somebody had been playing with clay, modeling clay, and you know, patted them into place. They bulged in the middle, but they fit very tight, so you couldn't get a slip of paper through between them. These were granite, and it's like, you know, we don't have that technology yet, or if we had it 4,000, 5,000 years ago, we've forgotten it. But that kind of technology tells you that there's some big dudes with some interesting power. And if you look at Machu Picchu, that's occurring up on the top of a mountain, which you can find seashells and stuff in the dirt around there. They're here, and they're big. And they
They're huge. And in fact, I've written this. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dante.
All right. Yeah, I was going to say, I want to comment earlier about the doorway being opened and people starting to see more things. And what's interesting is I've been watching this for a while. People are starting to get more comfortable with inviting the supernatural, with all the shows like Ghost Hunters and Medium, and, you know, all these different shows that influence people to talk to the dead. There's like a really big fad going on right now to get people to communicate with these spirits and open these doorways. But I'm not sure if anybody else was paying attention to the Raelian movement. Earlier this year, they started a tour. They hit all seven continents, where they were holding these huge conferences to encourage people to invite the alien brothers. And what I find most disturbing about the Raelians and their invitation, I guess you call conferences, is that they openly admit that Satan is one of the beings that they call the Elohim that they follow. And one of the beings that they follow claims to be Yahweh. And they openly teach this, and they use the Bible to kind of confirm what they believe. And so they're using this to trick a lot of people into inviting these spirits. And I think that is playing a major part into opening all these doorways and why we're having so many sightings and hauntings and different reports like that coming up these days, because people are so open to it and participating in it.
I believe you're right, Dante. I believe you're right.
Yeah, I believe that absolutely as well. You know, Stan, you were talking about some of these massive stones that a lot of these Machu Picchu and Baalbek and all these different places. If we just take the Bible literally, it talks about the Amorites being the size of cedar trees in Amos 2:9. And I was just doing a little study a while back on cedar trees. They start at about 30 feet and go up to 150 feet, the cedars of Lebanon. So unless God is just telling a fishtail, so to speak, bragging and exaggerating, which I don't believe he is, then if we just take scriptures literally, then at minimum, the Amorites were about 30 feet tall. Well, I just sent you a graphic. You guys can check it out if you want in the chat room there. It's babylonrisingblog.com/images/ArnoldBaalbek.jpg. That's capital A-R-N-O-L-D, capital B-A-A-L-B-E-K, Arnold Baalbek. And just showing what two 30-foot Arnolds would look like standing next to the huge blocks of Baalbek. And it's very easy to see how these massive megalithic structures all around the world could have been created and put in place by 30-foot people.
Yeah. You know, there's something else, too. Back in the time of Nimrod, you know, the Tower of Babel, people say the word. Preachers have preached about it, Bible studies have studied the Tower of Babel. But if you go into the Sumerian and the Semitic languages over in the Middle East, you'll find that that's two words put together. Babel is Bab and El. And Bab is a doorway, and El is a short form for God. And that's they were trying to build a portal then, Nimrod was, to get up into the upper levels. And that's when the angels, or the watchers, whatever they were at the time, said in the Bible, we must go down and scatter them and confound their language, lest they become as one of us, come up here and become as one of us, using the plural form. So I think we were starting to get technology, or they had access to it back in Nimrod's day, and that's why they just slowed us down. It was way too early in what had to happen, but it's there. I mean, it's just, there's just so much that points to this transdimensional stela. And I found a stela. Two-thirds of it was recovered from the artifacts and the artworks that the Nazis had captured during World War II. And the one-third of it was lost or went destroyed, or some private collector got it or whatever. But this stela had on it, from the time of King Marduk, it had an architectural drawing of a ziggurat, which was a stepped pyramid from the front, and then it had a top view, the floor plan of the gateway. So, I mean, it's there. It's just really there. And I wish that our pastors weren't so, I don't know, just community-minded and fun-minded. They get back to teaching what's really important right now and wake people up. They just put them to sleep.
Stan, do you have a link to that particular diagram or stela?
I'll see if I can find it. I've got it here on my computer in my artworks and stuff. But let me just see if I'll look for that. You guys go ahead and talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find it.
I agree with you completely that it's the gate of God is what Babel would translate to. And, you know, when Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, most people just think of Noah and the ark, because that's, of course, what he's most famous for. But what people need to realize is that Noah lived 950 years, 600 years before the flood, and 350 after the flood. Of course, before the flood, you've got all this Nephilim activity, and after the flood, you've got this Tower of Babel thing happening, which I believe, just as you said, is a gateway, where first it says that Nimrod began to become a Geborim, something began to happen to him. And then afterwards, the first thing he does is try to create a gateway to bridge universes, as it were, to basically go into heaven and assault God and kill heaven and take over. And when you look at things like CERN and what they're doing over there, it really does appear like we are doing a repeat of the Tower of Babel. plus, opening up gateways that we're not prepared to deal with what's coming through, though.
You know, I've talked about this a number of times over the years. When I was down in Australia, well, probably back in about 1980s, mid-80s, I had done some shows and stuff there locally, I'd mentioned that I'd been playing with a toroidal coil that I wound in a particular way, trying to get to make it work on gravity a certain way, and that it had caused me to be nauseous instantly when I fired it up, and the room, all the light of the things in the room, like, you know, the chair in front of me, the wall to the left, all the images bent like they were on saran wrap, you know, plastic wrap, pulled in toward the coil, and then the coil burned out, and I could never get it to work again. I was mentioning that in a program there, and I got a call from a guy about 30 miles away from me there in Perth, down at the docks in Fremantle, and he was a researcher, build coils, Tesla coils, and he says, you know, I'd like to have you come down and look at my toroidal coil. I've been doing the same thing. And so I thought, Russ, all right, I'll come on down. But he said, I'm in an old building. It's the old shipping storage building here for ships that came to port, you know, 100 years ago, whatever. And they used to store their cargoes here and their slaves and things. And down underneath, there was all these empty rooms that were like prisons or like, you know, you could lock people up in them. And but he'd taken this over, he got it cheaply, and so he had this huge warehouse. And in one little corner, everybody had a built-in office. So I thought, this sounds weird. I had my good friend from the church come with me.
Ellie's coming up. Ellie!
Hello.
Hi, Ellie.
Sorry, I'm a little late.
That's fine.
All right. Catch up.
Thanks, Dan.
Hey, good to hear from you. All right, so anyway, my friend Kim and I went down to see this guy, and, you know, this big creaky door gets pulled to the side. You go in, and he shuts us in. We go into his office. It's dark all around. And he shows me his coil, and while I'm looking at his coil and his Tesla coil, he was a brilliant designer for electronics, and he was saying, look, here's my coil, the toroidal thing, and here's how I've wound it. Now, how did you do yours? And I said, well, similar to that. I was already getting suspicious of the guy. Well, my friend Kim, while this guy's back was turned to him, was looking under calendars and stuff on the wall on the guy's desk, just lifting up pieces of paper to see what was there, and pointing to me, you know, kind of quietly saying, look at this. And there was Hebrew written, you know, Hebrew word for sword and fire and stuff, written behind all these things, but hidden from sight, so it looked like a normal office. And this guy was trying to gate beings from the underworld into this world. And the reason I know this is because Kim decided, look, he says to the guy, can I go take a leak out here? Where's your toilet in the factory here? He says, oh, well, do exactly what I say. Go down this hallway here, turn left, go down there and do all that. So Kim says, okay, I got it, and off he goes. So Kim gives me the sign, keep this guy in here and keep him busy. I'm going to take a scout around the factory here. So he goes over. He comes back. His eyes are like silver dollars. He says, you need to take a potty break, Stanley. And I said, oh, yes, right, okay. Here, you guys talk. So he, just as I passed him, he says, look to your right in that doorway down there. And so I did. I looked in through this room that was just square, and you could only see inside of it through a glass, you know, peephole about, oh, maybe 8-9 inches in diameter on the door. And I looked in, and I nearly dropped my teeth, too. I was looking at the goat head of Satan up on the wall, the pentagram on the floor, audience seats around. There wasn't anybody in there, but this is where they held their meetings, and there was no question this guy was trying to gate demons in. And that was, like, you know, in the mid-80s.
Wow.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, yeah, there's a lot of strange stuff going on.
You know, while I was on vacation visiting my family up in Massachusetts, my parents paid for my wife and I to go see my sister in Washington, D.C. Well, they live in Virginia, but while we went down there, we took a day trip over to D.C. And, of course, with all the research and everything that I've been doing in the last 2 years or so, I was really eager to check out some things there and didn't have but 5 hours. I mean, you need like a week or more to go through everything there in D.C., but since we only had about 5 hours, I had to pick and choose. And so I went to the Capitol building and, of course, walked into the center there. We can look up into the apotheosis of George Washington, or as Tom Horde would say, the womb of Isis. And you see right there this painting, the apotheosis of George Washington, which, of course, apotheosis means ascending into godhood. where you see George supposedly in heaven as a god surrounded by all these women. And if this was truly a Judeo-Christian country, as they say we were founded to be, you would think you'd see Abraham, Moses, or, you know, Gabriel, Michael, or something. That's not what you see there. You see Vulcan, you see Neptune, you know, you see Mercury,
wow,
and all these Greek gods up there. And I'm like, man. And then I look down a little bit further, and you see surrounding that painting are 72 pentagrams. Okay, 72. And then below the 72 pentagrams is this fresco that goes all the way around the Capitol Dome that's supposed to represent the history of the United States. So, yeah, you got Columbus, you got his stuff. You go around, and you see all these different images depicting the history of the United States. But right kind of, I think it was on the west side, if I remember right, there tucked into this fresco is the Mayan calendar. And Cortez standing there with the Mayans and in the Mayan calendar. I'm thinking, what the heck does the Mayan calendar have anything to do with American history? You know, it's right there in the fresco.
Oh,
and so as
we keep
going for a walk around the Capitol building. Now, you really, you know, it's true that you have to wear certain glasses because all your everything you see will be colored by the lenses of whatever you're looking through, you know, the glasses you're looking through. And so, of course, I got my, you know, conspiracy glasses on, and I'm looking through all these things and thinking about all the research that people like L.A. and Tom Horn and others have been doing on 2012 and these different things. And so I'm seeing all these things. We walk into what was the original place that the House of Representatives met. And in this, because of course, as the country grew, so did the House and the Senate. So they had to build onto the Capitol. Well, the original spot where the House met has this big statue of Isis. They call it Lady Liberty, but she's holding out a scroll. And off to her one side is an eagle, but off to the other side of her is a feathered serpent going around a pole. So I asked the tour guide, "What was the deal with that?" And she says, "Oh, that represents wisdom." Okay, so the serpent represents wisdom, and it's a feathered serpent, which if anybody who's studied anything to do with the Mayans knows that they're waiting for Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, to come back at December 21st. What year? 2012. Ding, ding, ding. So here it is in the Capitol building, and, you know, I'm freaking out. Everywhere I look, I'm seeing stuff like this. And we go downstairs underneath the rotunda where the apotheosis was, is an area that has a rose cross compass on the floor.
Wow.
And it's the architecture is very interesting down there. It looks like the old catacombs of Rome or something, you know. And so I asked her, what is this room here? And she called it the crypt. I said, oh, the crypt? Well, who's buried here? She said, oh, nobody's buried here. We just call it that.
Uh-huh.
Like, why do you call – why would you have this special room underneath the apotheosis of George Washington called the crypt? So I start probing some more. I ask her, well, when was the Capitol Dome finished and the painting and all that done? And she said, oh, 1965. Well, I'm like, well, isn't that the year that Abraham Lincoln was killed? And she said, oh, yeah. In fact, when he was killed, they held a special ceremony where they had the casket right here underneath the apotheosis of George, where they do some kind of special deal for presidents that they've done every year since then whenever a president dies.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, you know.
That sounds like the Skull and Crossbones type stuff, you know?
I'm telling you, forget Dan Brown. Let's go back to George Washington. You know, what was this country really founded on? And, of course, you flip over the dollar bill and you look at the Great Seal of the United States, and you got these steps. Each step is 13 steps representing a time period that starts in 1776 and ends when? Oh, ding, 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 2012.
Yeah.
You really start wondering, okay, what's going on here? You know,
yeah.
What kind of portals and rituals are taking place in our own Capitol building, which they called – I watched this little video. It was the history of the Capitol and how it was created and everything. They called it the Temple of Liberty. Well, Liberty is Isis, and Temple is usually a place where gods reside.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
That's what they're calling our Capitol building.
Boy. Yeah, go on. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, before
one last thing real quick on that was I had heard about a statue called the Awakening. And it's a bearded god coming up out of the ground. And I read that it was in Washington, D.C. So I became obsessed with trying to find it. And on the way, we ended up taking a side trip to the Masonic temple there. Oh, man, a lot of stuff in that place. But we kept going, and we found it by accident, actually. We were driving by the National Harbor, which is a new area there in D.C., And we drove between, I looked between these two buildings and I saw this giant arm sticking up. I said, oh, that's got to be it. So we pulled the car over and parked and walked down to it. Well, the first thing we did was walk between two huge pillars that were of eagles, these massive eagles. Well, Matthew 24, I believe is verse 28, if I remember right, says that for wherever the eagles are, for wherever the carcass is, there the eagles shall be gathered together.
Right.
So we walk through these two huge pillars of eagles, and there's this massive Christmas tree, which I don't want to get into a big debate on that, but if you go back in the history of the Christmas tree, it's basically a phallic symbol. Mm-hmm. And right below this massive phallic symbol is this God coming up out of the ground on the beach of the National Harbor.
Wow.
And this is a recent area. They recently built this area. So, man, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in 2012, but I believe something's going to happen, and I believe the United States is going to be actively involved, unfortunately, with whatever it is. But, you know, I just, you know, I look at these things, and you can't help but wonder, because whether we believe in this stuff or not is irrelevant. They, whoever they are, you know, it's in quotes, they, whatever they believe, they believe this stuff, which means whatever they believe, they're acting out on. They're acting out on these things.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they're going to be the first to be chewed up and consumed when Satan takes over, you know, because they've obviously been traitors to their own kind and can't be trusted by him either. He'll use them and throw them away. They'll get a big surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sorry, go
unfortunately,
on.
Unfortunately, that'll probably happen after they release them.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys get the links I just fast passed you of the Marduk Stela?
I did.
Okay. I've sent two to each of you, I think. One is the Stela as it is, and the other is the orange lines I put over to show you what we could salvage from this damaged stela of the ziggurat's front and the top floor plan up the top. You can see where they have the chamber there, the little circular chamber there and stuff at the doorway. As the legend goes, the gods came through the top, mm-hmm. and they would stay on a level for, you know, minutes or hours, consuming refreshments that had been left there for them. And then it would come down to the next level and wait a few minutes or hours, and then to the next and the next. And what they were doing was discharging the energy of their bodies, because they could not touch anyone until they'd normalize their energy density to that of this dimension where we are, our universe. And it's much like what Christ said to Mary when he'd risen from the dead. Mm-hmm. Don't touch me. I've not yet ascended. You know, it'll hurt you. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, You can see the stela there. There's more to it down at the bottom, which we're still trying to piece together, but there's big chunks of it been taken out. It got burned in a fire and stuff, and it's incomplete, but enough of it there to show you that they were trying to build a stepped pyramid for their ziggurat. There you go. You know, this paper I'm working on here, I've been working on for over a year, about changes in the Earth's gravitational field. We're seeing changes that in the northern hemisphere are opposite to those in the southern hemisphere in the Earth's electromagnetic or gravitational field. It's a combined field. And every two or three years, we're seeing it flip-flop, and I don't know why. I do know the mechanism for what's creating the gravity, and it's a spinning field. That's a vortex that is a very fine fluid, if you wish, that is so fine that it's like atoms are to mountains or to planets in size ratio, so that our atoms that we know and our subatomic structures that we can see can be formed by spinning vortices, spherical vortices in this fluid, the ether space, if you want to call it that, that forms when it forms a star or a planet or a galaxy. It forms a void inside underneath the outer shell that you see with your eye. This void, then in the center of that, has a solid ball of energy of one type or another. In our planet, it's the hot core. and then there's this empty void, and then up to the mantle of the planet where we are. So somewhere inside there, we're seeing a semi-hollow Earth. I think stars are the same way. And the latest information on the galaxies, and particularly our galaxy, is that the supermassive black holes at the center of galaxies are the same thing. They have a shell at the outside, which is the what they call the Schwarzschild horizon, the horizon event. And then inside that is a void, and then a spinning high-speed core that periodically unwinds and shoots huge beams of energy out the north and south pole of the center of the galaxy, and then it stops. And each galaxy is doing its own thing in its own time, but our galaxy is now starting to open up at the polar regions and shoot out these supermassive jets, you know, gamma particles and all kinds of stuff. So the Earth and the Sun seem to be following that same general trend with their own spins, and our poles are warming up, and I think that we're going to see, you know, holes, small perhaps, but holes opening up at the poles fairly soon, and that might be the doorway. They're talking about opening, send the angel down to open that doorway to let those beasties out.
Wow.
Very interesting. Ellie, what are your thoughts on some of this we've been talking about?
Well, look, I mean, we're in a... I mean, what's coming down just today, to take it out of the, let's say, the 2012 realm, bring it down into biblical prophecy. Lebanon fired a rocket towards Israel, which exploded in a village in southern Lebanon. Apparently, allegedly, there are troops massing on the Syrian border, Jordan-Syrian border, which I find alarming. Assad is now arming his missiles with chemical weapons. That was my blog today. This thing is coming down faster than a freight train. Meanwhile, in Iran, they are doing maneuvers, practice military maneuvers, to close the Straits of Hormuz. Now, I wrote that in a blog probably a year ago, that the Iranians have one offensive position in the event of any type of a war, and that is to close the Straits of Hormuz, because 40% of the world's oil comes through the Straits of Hormuz. If they can do that, they basically disrupted the entire global financial establishment, for lack of a better word. And that's just happening today in the last 24 hours. That's all current stuff. So I have maintained and continue to maintain that 2012 is a self-fulfilling prophetic stage event. And in fact, it's already done what it's supposed to do. It's moved the dialogue away from true biblical prophecy, which we're seeing literally on the three things I just mentioned, with Iran, with the troops on Jordan, with, you know, Syria. And instead, it's moved the dialogue to the Mayan calendar. In the new book, The Cosmic Chess Match, I discuss this. How can we trust a society that ritualistically sacrificed 70,000 human beings? We can't. We don't know where the information for the Mayan calendar really comes from. I believe that it's an incursion of fallen angels, going back to the Book of Enoch type stuff. That's the secrets of heaven were being shown to these people through the auspices of a fallen being, a fallen angel. And that's what they came up with. This thing, it's a culture that didn't have the wheel. You know, where do you get the knowledge to build pyramids in this calendar, which is more accurate than our calendar until the modern age? I believe it came through a fallen angel. And the fact that we look at the human sacrifice, the 70,000 people slaughtered ritualistically in the Mayan culture, and this is, I mean, come on, wake up, folks. This is what it is. I mean, this is so luciferic, it's ridiculous. And the dirty little secret is no one ever talks about the 70,000 human beings and the culture that was steeped in ritualistic sacrifice. The kings and queens, for this might get a little graphic, the kings would pierce their phalluses, all right, with a manta ray barb and let the blood drop onto either a leaf or in a bowl or whatever, and then burn that as an offering to the gods. The queens would do the same type of a thing. They would take the manta ray barb, pull out their tongues and pierce their tongues all the way through and let the blood... I mean, this is like an incredibly ritualistic, and in my opinion, satanic ritualistic culture. So what it's done is it's typical of Lucifer, What he's done is he shifted the dialogue away from real biblical prophecy, which hinges around Israel, which hinges around the Middle East, and shifts us over to 2012. And he's already succeeded. Most people know more about 2012 than they do about Ezekiel 38, Isaiah 17, Psalm 83. And in fact, in my opinion, this is exactly what he's shaping up on the world stage. Again, when you see Syria talking about arming their weapons with chemical weapons, or arming their missiles with chemical weapons, when you read about troops massing on the Jordanian-Syrian border, when Turkey is saber-rattling like crazy, when Iran is calling for military maneuvers, military games, war games, in a simulation of closing the Straits of Hormuz, hello? I mean, you got to look at all these three prophecies, Isaiah 17, which could be the first one, followed by Psalm 83, followed by Ezekiel 38. All three could come down extremely rapidly. And so this is why I, you know, continue to look at the Middle East, look at Israel. It's the time of Jacob's trouble, not Bob, Fred's, or Ernie's. So we need to keep focused on Israel, in my opinion, and watch on almost on an hourly basis at this point to what's happening over there.
You know, L.A., you brought up an interesting point. You're talking about the blood sacrifices that they were doing. Satan does do imposter things of the real thing. I mean,
sure.
If we were to have a blood sacrifice to be cleaned and made whole and, you know, washed in the sight of the Elohim. But so we don't practice blood sacrifice any longer, but they do. And that's what all this is about, with the piercing the tongue and all the other stuff, the ripping the hearts out. It's interesting because they're saying that to appease that god, you have to have blood sacrifice.
Yes.
Just an imposter, just a, you know.
Yeah, it is. But it's fascinating to see it from a historical perspective. Here we are in 2011 on the cusp of 2012, and for the first time in history, you know, with the internet, we can Google anything. There's no excuse for not knowing what you want to know. It's at the tip of our fingers. We're a small planet now. We're all linked up, wired together via the internet, via satellites. We see everything in real time. We can track the birth pangs that Yeshua talks about, Jesus talks about. We can track wars and rumors of wars, famines and pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places. You couldn't do that 300 years ago. But now it's like screaming at us. I mean, I get pings all day long for earthquakes all over the globe. That's unprecedented. And I just feel that the time is extremely short. I'm at a date center. I was on a show last night with a secular guy, a nice guy, and I really like the guy. But, you know, he's been saying, you know, L.A., you've been saying that for 3.5 years, ever since I had you on the program. And I said, look, Alan, with all due respect, yeah, that's true. But these prophecies are 2,600 years old, some of them older than that. And we've been waiting for these things. What's 3 years, you know? I mean, let's look at it in perspective. It's heating up. It's ramping up. It's accelerating towards this point, this flash point. And I truly believe, and I realize it sounds like a doom and gloomer, and it's like, you know, oh my gosh, he's fear-mongering. But when this thing hits, it's a game changer, in my opinion. And life as we know it will cease to exist the way we experience it right now. I mean, there was a run on a bank in Latvia today. Anybody with half a brain should be looking at that and going, oh my gosh.
Hey, L.A., you know, did you hear about the price of butter in Norway is
$500
a pound of butter. Good Lord.
A pound of butter. I mean, this is, you know, Stan, what you just said, I mean, this is alarming. And it's like the signs are here. And Americans, you know, go to the Fox News website, which I look at because I just laugh at. There's never any news there. It's all, you know, soft porn and Chaz Bono or Lindsay Lohan or all this nonsense. Anything type of distraction, you know, to keep people off track, off base, in the dark. I mean, these are signs. When butter goes to $500 a pound or whatever, and there's a bank run at Latvia, and the euro is in extremely, extremely tenuous position. If that thing collapses, the dollar will follow at some point. And you remember, folks, just real quick story. I was in Canada at a conference this year, and you know, I was up there It was a great conference, and I loved the people that I spoke to, and I, you know, got to yak for about 10 hours straight, blah, blah, blah. And I'm up there, and people are at my book table, and they're paying in funny money, Monopoly money. They're paying in Canadian dollars. And I'm looking at this stuff going, well, what's this? I mean, I have no idea what it looks like. Monopoly money to me. It's not bank, you know, backed up by anything. It's just okay. It's a Canadian whatever it is, and you know, you're giving it to me, and you know, who man be thrifty, whatever. It's okay. And the people that I were with were just laughing. And they cut me a check, and off I went. Right, fine. I sold a bunch of product. What blew me away was, and it just really hit home, is that we deal in paper currency, which is backed up by absolutely nothing, and. It, look, today I bought more silver, and I will continue to do so, even if it's in small lots, to try to move my cash currency, which I don't have hundreds of thousands of, but I've got some, to move that and dump my cash and move it into silver. Because silver is affordable, and at least I've got something tangible. So when this whole thing tanks and reemerges, at least I've got something.
L.A., you remember we were talking the other day about mortgages and stuff?
Sure.
Let me relate to the other guys what we're talking about. In every mortgage paper that's probably in the last 15, 20 years been signed in the United States, in every state, there's several clauses from the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, in your mortgage. And it says, if you store more than the quote-unquote normal amount, which they don't define, of gasoline for your mower, diesel and kerosene and propane. It lists those things. If you store more than the normal amount on your property anywhere and you have a mortgage, they can call your entire note due and payable in full within 30 days. Now, they're going to use that against us when people say, complain, because when the new world currency comes in, which it'll have to when the dollar drops, we'll have to have a global currency replace it, and it's not going to have the same buying power that our dollar does now when we sign the contracts for the mortgages. They're going to say, well, you owe us more, in essence, than you did before under the, mm-hmm. with the new currency. And if you don't like it and you don't pay your note off, then they can force you into foreclosure for your property. That's all across the United States. They got you by the short and curlies. It's just bad. It's unbelievable the stuff they've slipped into contracts all around. Of course, most of us here talking today probably going to have to worry about it. They'll probably put us in some FEMA camp. But
yeah, no kidding. Over my dead body, thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably the way they'll do it too.
Yeah, that's fine. I have no problem with that. I will not go willingly. Not going to go into the truck and go, oh, okay, we're just going to be relocated. Not going to happen.
Not going to go away quietly into the night, hey?
No, this is not going to happen.
Well, and just one example real quick is my wife is a nurse, and at the hospital, they basically said, if you don't take the flu shot, consider you don't have a job. Well, we fought it, and through a religious voucher, she still has her job. But a lot of Christians didn't even stand up. They just took it without questions asked.
Yeah, and who knows what's in those things.
Exactly. I wouldn't trust any of them. Lord. You know, every direction you turn, they've got us surrounded. The only thing that's going to be saving us is the Lord himself. Yeshua.
Amen. Amen. And that's my hope. I mean, look, we went out and bought a bunch of canned food and stuff for our, you know, kind of augment the stash a little bit today. And that's always good to do. And, you know, we're talking about this, and I realize that, you know, very few of our people that we know are actually doing this. There are a few people that we do know that are doing this. But most people look at us like, you know, the deer in the headlights. You're doing what?
Yeah.
You know, you must be a crazy, you know, some kind of paranoid conspiracy. No, I mean, things happen. And, you know, we know that we can survive 6 months. I've got a very vibrant garden out here, and, you know, we've got a good lot of food. But, you know, frankly, and I really don't want to, you know, have to be doing that. I mean, I hope that at some point, and I don't know when that is, you know, I truly believe the Lord will take us out of this thing. And that is my hope. That is my real hope. All this other stuff is sort of band-aids for what might be coming. It's smart to do, and we're prepared. But, you know, it's like, it's not my first choice. My first choice is that I hear the trumpet and up we go.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we have friends and neighbors that we see several times a month, sometimes at dinner, and they've known for years, you know, what we're about, but they're still not preparing. And I can just see what's going to come down the pike here. They're going to be saying, the government is, well, look, if you know anybody that's hoarding food and weapons and stuff, turn them in and we'll give you a reward for it.
Yeah.
And your friends will suddenly just become your your accusers.
You know, Stan, the one thing that they, and we've heard this before. I mean, you know, the peacekeepers or the promise keeper guys in federal law enforcement, where, you know, certain sections of law enforcement have signed, you know, oaths, basically oath keepers, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, that if something happens like that, they will not turn on American citizens. And the other thing that no one is, the New World Order certainly has never betted on, unlike Europe, which, you know, these guys don't have any guns over there, and Chinese rounded them all up, and the same thing pretty much in the Soviet Union. America is armed to the teeth. I mean, we are. When Obama got elected, gun sales spiked, as did ammunition. I mean, it's kind of humorous in a way, but everybody kind of sees the writing on the wall, and, you know, gun sales just go through the roof. It's just ridiculous. And, you know, the bottom line is, during World War II, now granted, that's World War II, and I realize that the weaponry that they have now is far more sophisticated. But, you know, if you're armed, then you're considered dangerous. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if you're armed with a group of people, now you're really dangerous. I mean, just look at the Waco, Texas debacle that happened. I mean, there was a standoff for how many days, and no one did anything, and, you know, that's a whole conspiracy deal with the, you know, accelerants and the fire and all that stuff. Who knows what really happened? But, you know, the bottom line is, okay, there was weird stuff going down there. I get it. I'm not defending their position. But the bottom line is this. It's like, and I truly believe that we need to not ban in like, you know, some sort of wacky militia type deal, but, you know, we need to have a network of people and that we do band together if everything goes down. What happens if there's an EMP? You know, we've heard politicians say this for the last 2 or 3 years. See, people, American people don't really pay attention to this stuff. When Newt Gingrich gets up on a Monday morning and goes, well, you know, we really should be concerned about electromagnetic pulse weapons because... Or Hillary Clinton says, you know, American the terrorists are wanting to detonate nuclear devices in American cities. You see, we don't pay any attention to that. But, you know, if Chaz Bono, you know, does a pirouette, whoa, look at Chaz, right? It's just ridiculous how the dialogue is shifted and controlled and managed, as Chuck Missler likes to call it. It's a managed agenda. The bottom line is this. You get an EMP bomb, which is so easy to do in this country. I mean, it really is. And I'm not advocating that. Please, let me make it really clear. I mean, that would just be horrific. But, you know, we do have enemies around the globe. And it's very simple. You just get a nuke, like the Iranians could get a nuclear device and just convert an ocean-going cargo ship, which looks like it's got, you know, a bunch of tankers on it or whatever, and, you know, cargo, and they're moving out in the ocean, and it's completely unsuspected. But what it is, it's converted into a missile launcher. And you launch that nuke 200 miles up in the atmosphere and explode it. That's an EMP, electromagnetic pulse bomb. And it's over the East Coast. You've wiped out everything pretty much on the East Coast. And guess what? Unless you've got a Faraday cage around your whatever, your cell phone, it won't work. It's over. If it's on, it's toast. And so that's what people don't get. And that's why I advocate 4 to 6 months worth of food and water and become armed. And let me end this little rant by saying this. Every Black Friday for the last 3 or 4 years, it gets worse and worse. And we see the videos on YouTube. This year was especially barbaric, where, you know, the whistle blows and all these maniacs rush into these ridiculous stores and fight over $20 trinkets. It's there. Lawlessness is here. There is no civility. And all one needs to do is just Google Black Friday rush of madness on YouTube and watch it for yourself. That is what we have descended to. That's what our culture now is. Look at the rage on the freeways. Look at the tensions in the city. Feel it in the markets. You know, it's all over. It's everywhere. And it's growing. And all it takes is one little dink, and you get complete anarchy.
You know, L.A., I agree. And even the Hopi agree in their prophecies about what's about to happen to the non-indigenous people of North America. We're going to be totally destroyed. And we're going to be used against ourselves, because certainly there will be people who will stand up,
yes,
and say, I'm not going to take it anymore, and bring their weapons out. And then there will be an attempt at martial law, and then there'll be backfighting. And you're going to have ethnic, religious, socioeconomic polarizations within the whole country. And they're going to be armed, and they're going to be short-tempered because of the EMP stuff. And this is what's been planned. We're looked at by the rest of the world as a bunch of useless, silly people who consume with gay abandon and don't pay. You know, we just you know, and they're gonna see us go down. They want us to go down. They're not going to realize it's going to hurt them even further. But we are not needed. They have raped us for our technology over into China, into Europe, and into the Middle East. They don't need us anymore. We're just useless eaters. So if we destroy each other and, you know, in the process have all the civil war and whatever, that's great because we're a problem that they don't have to face anymore. And the Hopi even said that this will happen and that there will be survivors out of this terrible multifaceted civil war that will join with the Hopi and the Navajo and some of the other indigenous American people and come up into the Four Corners region up here, you know, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, and set up a new tribe that will repopulate what's left of America later. And that's their prophecies. But I'm just telling you that the pure logistics of the war that's being waged against the people of Earth, we're being sacrificed, the United States. And there's you can't not do anything. You know, you don't want to just sit there and let them run you into the truck. But as sure as you do, it's going to give them excuse to do what else they want in a big hurry.
It's just, you know, see where it goes.
Just on a side note, our sheriff was on the radio show about a month ago, which is Laramie County here in Wyoming, and he basically said that if they come in, they will escort them to the border. Be as that is, we'll see who they take, you know, and they do, you know, we'll see what they'll do.
When you say that they'll escort them to the border, who is the they're talking about coming in?
Well, they were saying that the BLM themselves right now are trying to push a lot more laws, and they said that, no, we won't let them do that, and if they do try to force it, then we will push them out to the border.
Right.
Interesting.
Yep.
He is standing with the sheriffs, the Western sheriffs that are making that attempt at standing up against for the Constitution.
Right. Okay. Yep. You know, guys, this is all heavy stuff, and I guess we'll have a lot of people listening to this that probably aren't even believers yet. It's not all dark. I mean, we know that the Lord is our answer, but a lot of folks don't know why. It's, you know, they think that they do good works, you know, whether in a church or not. They're good people. They think that if that's the case, then they'll go to heaven. It's a simple solution. But it's not right. You know, none of us gets there except through that doorway, and Jesus is our doorway. We've got that promise, and we've got the promise of the rapture, too, you know, that he's going to come and take his believers out of the worst part of this before it hits the fan. And that's the blessed hope, that we're not just doomed. We have him on our side, and he's got a plan, and he's told us about it in the Bible. I just think it's really time for people to talk to their friends and relatives, some Christian people to talk to their friends and relatives that aren't yet saved and say, look, here's why. And don't be frightened because, you know, you can be saved out of this and you can live forever after this.
Hallelujah.
We're doing it, you know, to our children and stuff. We're making little packages and stuff now. Then we're going to have another go at it, a couple of them that really need to see what's happening because we don't have much time left. When I wrote that Cosmic Conspiracy book back in, gosh, what was it, 1978, I think it was, I put a whole third of a fourth of the book, third section was on the reason of why we have all the inequities and the terrible things here on the earth, talking about the war between good and evil and the way out of it. And I never changed the first 200 pages. Everything is printed there on those first 200 pages of the book, even in subsequent editions. Page 127 was a call to be saved, and where I had people sign that page and say, look, okay, I understand, and I want to be saved, and, you know, I'm on Jesus' side, you know. And I have had that many people over the years come back and say, sign page 127. Thank you very much. But we need to do things like that now. We need to give encouragement with the doom. You got to say, look, okay, it's bad.
I agree.
But don't leave people just, you know, cutting their wrists. You know, we're not worried about it because we know we're taken care of. But we've got to share it with them.
Amen.
Rob and Dante, you're pretty quiet out there.
Just listening. I you know, there is a lot of doom and gloom. There's no doubt about it. And while LA was talking earlier about things that are going on in Iran and whatnot, I was reminded that there was something that I found in the Book of Enoch that basically says that in the last days that things are going to kick up and it's going to be in Persia, that the angels are going to do what they do. Let me see here. It's chapter 56, verse 5. In those days, the angels shall return. So that's what we've been talking about. And gather together and throw themselves to the east on the Parthians and Medes. That's all in that region that we're talking about. They shall stir up the kings so that the spirit of unrest and disturbance will come on them, and they shall drive them from their thrones, and they that they may rush out like lions from their lairs and as hungry wolves among their flocks. And it goes on, it talks about some other things about in those days hell shall open up its jaws and they shall be swallowed up. So all these things have been prophesied to happen for a long time. The Bible talks about it. Other ancient texts talk about it. It should be no surprise to us that these things are happening. Mm. But I'm actually excited. I have to say that, yes, there's a lot of bad stuff going on in the world, but greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world. And regardless of what happens, there's victory in Christ. And I don't know when the rapture is going to happen. I don't know if it's pre, mid, post. I've taken various positions on all three of them. Kind of my dad says he's pan trib. In the end, it's all going to pan out so, one way or another. I've written a series of blogs on it, and I've kind of landed on a position that there's a pre-trib hiding, not necessarily a harpazo rising, based on the order of events listed in Matthew 24 through chapter 25. In particular, where Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, that's Matthew 24:37, and he goes on from there and talks about two in the field, one's there and one's taken, and left, you know, one's taken, one's left behind. Well, if you look in the days of Noah, who was taken away and who was left behind? The bad guys were taken away and the good guys were left behind. In the days of Noah, it says that they sat in the ark in a place of safety. It says God shut the door. Mm-hmm. And they sat in the ark for 7 days. Well, we talk about the 70th week of Daniel as a seven-day period of time, represented as a week of years. And so you've got the parallel of the seven there. So in the parable of the 10 virgins in Matthew 25 immediately follows 24, and God showed me a long time ago to throw the big numbers out because they weren't there to begin with, that being the chapters. Because I think in a Western mindset, we look at chapters as change of thought. You know, change a chapter, it's a different thought. Biblically speaking, those chapters weren't there, so you should continue to read it as a complete thought. If you do, that passage 25, the parable of the 10 virgins, immediately follows the description of the last days being like the days of Noah. And when he talks about the five wise virgins, they go in with the bridegroom, and it says, he shut the door. Well, there's your parallel again. God shut the door, the bridegroom shuts the door. Noah and his family go in for 7 days of safety. Could it be that the five wise go in instead of up to a place of safety? My wife had an idea a while back as we started studying Hebrew and studying the Torah from a Hebrew perspective. She said, why don't we read the Bible from both ends toward the middle? You know, read Genesis, Revelation, and, you know, kind of work our way in. And I didn't get very far doing that before I realized, wow, Revelation is a play-by-play. You talk about a cosmic chess match. Revelation is a play-by-play exact repeat of the Exodus. Mm-hmm. The plagues are almost identical. And Chuck Missler has done some wonderful work on this, talking about each of the 10 plagues of the Exodus were a direct parallel assault against a different god of Egypt. So there's a god of frogs, so they got a plague of frogs. There's, you know, the god of this, god of that. Each of the 10 plagues were a direct assault against 10 different gods. And if the thesis is true that the Antichrist has something to do with Nimrod, who is Osiris, then we're fighting against the same God. And you look at what happened in the Exodus, the Jews had to experience, or I should say the Hebrews, the Hebrew people, experienced 3 out of the 10 plagues. But the other 7, they remained in a place of safety called Goshen, while the rest of Egypt was being obliterated. And so I started doing some keyword searches in the Bible regarding being hidden, places of sanctuary, places of refuge. And I found a ton of scriptures in the Old Testament that, like Zephaniah 2:3 is a perfect example. Seek the Lord, all you meek of the earth, which have wrought his judgment. Seek righteousness, seek meekness, and it may be that you shall be hid in the day of the Lord's anger. Huh. And there's a bunch of other scriptures just like that.
All right, go on.
So what I was going to say is that my focus, I do the same research everybody else on this call is doing too, and it can get to, when you're doing this kind of research, it's sometimes hard not to get afraid, sometimes hard not to get kind of stressed out, because there's so much garbage going on in the world and so much scary stuff happening. But I have to keep grounding myself and say, wait a minute, who do I serve? And I'm on the good guy's side. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a rapture or whether it's a hidden place of safety, I don't know. But my desire right now, as much as I am doing the research and trying to be a good watchman so I can tell others and warn others, my hope is in the Lord. And quite frankly, I'm excited, because if this is indeed a rematch, so to speak, of the Exodus, then, hey, it's going to be we're going to get front row seats to a pretty amazing battle, and we're on the good side. So yeah, that's just kind of my take on it.
All right, look, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I think that's quite interesting. I'm trying to rationalize that with the Greek in the 1 Thessalonians 4:17 being caught up together. In the English, it says being caught up together with them in the clouds. But when you translate it bit by bit in the Greek, the Koine, it's caught up together with them inside the clouds. And this is, you're going to be changed. Your body's going to be changed. I don't know whether you drop this body will walk around and down, and your spiritual body will go, but it will go to them to be with the Lord and stay with him forever. Now, it doesn't say that you go to heaven just be where the Lord is. Now, he might be here on the planet someplace, or in orbit, or on the moon. It doesn't really matter. You're going to be with him, and he'll take care of you. So I agree with you. So don't think I don't. So
it's all cool. I just, you know, I'm excited in these last days, and you know, unless God's playing a big game with people, which I don't believe he does.
No.
There are a lot of people, and I'm not just saying this because this is happening to me. I'm saying what I'm about to say because I'm meeting a lot of people who have similar stories, that God has put a really huge and powerful vision in their life to do something. And in every single case, in my case included, it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of time for those visions to be accomplished. Now, of course, in my case, I'm talking about the TV series many of you know that I'm working on. But the Lord has confirmed in more ways than I have time to talk about here that he did indeed put this in me to do. So I believe that the Lord is faithful to complete that which he's begun in us. And I've met just in the last week probably a half a dozen people who have similar big visions that are only just now beginning to manifest. Where, like I said at the beginning of the show, and LA missed the beginning of this, but I'm real close to getting funded for seed. And that's huge, you know?
Yeah, it is, especially in this economy.
Yeah, you know, and I do believe there's something going to happen to the economy. I do believe there's going to be a shaking, and I definitely believe something's going to happen in 2012. I don't know what that is. But on the flip side of that, I also believe God's got some big moves on that chessboard still ready to go. And and I take hope in that. And regardless, we're told to occupy until he comes. And Amen. For me, I'm just doing what I know that God's called me to do, and keeping the eye on the prize, you know.
Well, look, L.A. said it, you know, people ought to prepare a bit of food, a bit of medicine, water, whatever you need, defensive
sure.
weapons, to endure until he comes. And, you know, Holly's book, the Dare to Prepare book, that's all she talks about in there. Is
great book.
Yeah, you get prepared, and she's done research and had people write in over the years where she's been talking about this, and they say, look, you ought to put this thought in, and have you thought about this, put that in. And, you know, it's grown to a huge book, but the reason it has is because people are realizing it and pulling together with her to put the information out for people that are going to suddenly, right now, realize, hey, gee, you know, maybe you're right, maybe we ought to get prepared. And I hope they have time left to get prepared at this late date. But, I can't stress that enough, LA. You're right.
Yeah, and I agree with that, too, by the way. I'm doing all of that LA talked about as well. Because I was a Boy Scout.
Hey, there you go.
Me, too.
Be prepared.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, the Special Air Services, the SAS down in Australia, that's their elite group, like their, you know, Rangers or something. Their motto is "Who dares wins." So, there you go.
Don't say anything that you gotta say.
Well, I definitely agree with most of what has been said. I do think 2012 is going to be something I don't know what for sure. I think there's going to be something that happens 2012, and I think it's going to be along the lines of something openly and undeniably supernatural to those of us who are or who have been watching this stuff go on. To other people, it may seem like an extraterrestrial presence or, you know, whatever they want to define it as. But I definitely agree with a lot of the stuff that has been said about starting to get prepared, because everything is pointing towards economic collapse and the need to prepare. And that's one of the things I've been neglecting to do. And I actually just started a new website called IndoorSurvivalist.com to kind of motivate me to do it. And I'm really starting from scratch. But just to really drive home the point that everybody else said, really the only escape from this is Christ, is having a faith in Christ as the personal Lord and Savior of all mankind, because it doesn't matter how much you prepare or, you know, what steps you take. Ultimately, it's going to come down to and Christ. And if you believe that he is the Savior of mankind. So I encourage everybody to begin a relationship with Christ if they don't already have one with him.
Absolutely. Dante, we didn't quite catch that website. You're kind of breaking up. No, just send me the link and I'll put it up. Well, you know, we have about 20 minutes left in what's kind of going on. You know, what is God personally speaking to each one of your hearts? You know, anything that you have to say there?
IndoorSurvivalist.com.
Okay.
I don't know if you can hear me. My internet. All right, yeah, my internet's been going in and out, so I'll go ahead and...
Well, send me a link, and I'll put that in the intro there of your website. What is God speaking to all of you? Is there anything that you want to share that, you know, that in your time with God, he's been speaking to your heart?
Yeah, man. As I said, I started studying Hebrew this year, and in studying the Torah in particular from a Hebrew perspective, and of course, beginning to understand the seven feasts of God. Which a lot of people like to say the seven feasts of the Jews, but it's not. It's the seven feasts of God. And what I realized going through that is that it's a script. I've been in theater since 1986. You have a script, and the script tells you what your mark is, what your lines are, where the props need to go, what sets need to be, when, where. It tells you everything. And when you realize that Yeshua followed that script to the T. I'm talking. Have you guys seen the show 24?
Yeah,
yes, Kiefer Sutherland?
I have.
Yeah.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
And that each episode is like, you know, 1 hour. You know, and right. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll do a split screen where Kiefer Sutherland's doing something and the bad guy's doing something. And somebody else does. So they have like three images on the screen happening simultaneously. And I started to think about, as I started to understand that Yeshua Jesus fulfilled the first three feasts. Perfectly. I mean, to every single minute detail, is it's just like the show 24. I mean, when he was being put on trial between Herod and Pilate, he was being inspected. The lamb was being inspected. Simultaneously, split screen, you've got the lamb being inspected by the high priest in the temple. And every single detail, when the high priest got to a certain point before the last lamb, he would say, "I thirst." Simultaneously, Christ on the cross, he says, "I thirst." Jesus' last words, "It is finished." When the final lamb slain in the temple, the high priest says, "It's finished," in stereo. I mean, it's mind-blowing when you see how many things were fulfilled to the letter. And then, of course, the Holy Spirit came on Pentecost and fulfilled the fourth one. There's three remaining. Those are all the fall feasts. And so what a lot of people don't understand is when we talk about things like the rapture, the return of Christ, they talk about, well, no man knows the day or the hour. Well, without a Hebrew understanding, people don't realize that that is a Hebrew idiom referring to a specific day in the script, which is the Feast of Yom Teruah, or some people will say Rosh Hashanah, the Feast of Trumpets. is called the day no man knows the day or the hour, because it requires two witnesses to go out to the Temple Mount and look for the sliver of the new moon, which has to be at a very specific angle on the horizon. Mm-hmm. That's why they call it the day no man knows the day or the hour, because it's a two-day event. Just lots of these things. And so I'm looking at that, and this is the first year that I've even really been aware of these things. So every feast this year has been a learning experience for me. This year coming up, I'm looking forward to actually participating in them and doing what you do on those days. But when we were going to some of the Hebrew classes on the fall feasts, we've had a drought here in Texas. And on Yom Teruah, Rosh Hashanah, there was a 20% chance of rain, which basically means it ain't going to happen. Well, as this Jewish messianic guy is up there talking about the things that are yet to be fulfilled and what they believe Yeshua is going to do on that particular day, we're in a church that had windows all around the top of it, and it started lighting up like a strobe light. I mean, it was just crazy. This lightning storm came in. It was unbelievable. And as soon as I saw that light, it was like the old horror movies, you know, and the guy would say, "It's alive," you know, and the lightning would go off. It was like this rabbi dude would say, you know, "And Yeshua's going to do this," and then lightning. I was immediately brought to the scripture there in Matthew 24, where he says, "As the lightning shines in the east and is seen in the west, so shall it be when he comes back." And this is happening while this guy is talking. And so I passed a little note down the aisle to all my friends who were sitting there, and one of them just jumped up and went outside. She's like, "Forget this. I'm going to go wait and see if he's coming," you know, because we believe we're not setting dates because we don't know what year he's coming back, but we can know the season at least within 2 days, if this is true, of when he's coming back. And the other two fall feasts, the exact same thing happened in the final fall feast, Feast of Tabernacles. Man, the sky, I had never seen the sky like this in my life. For 30 minutes, it was like somebody put on a fog machine and a strobe light. I've never seen anything like it. Lightning just like crazy. And it happened exactly on the three fall feasts. And we haven't had any rain really since then or before then. So what I believe that is a tech rehearsal. In theater, you have rehearsal, rehearsal, rehearsal. Tech rehearsal is when you make sure the foggers are working, the lights are working, all the sound cues are working. It's all the technical things. And then you have a dress rehearsal. And then one day the curtain opens and it's the main event. Mm-hmm. And my personal belief is that we're entering into the tech rehearsal phase. The spirit of Elijah is going out. I believe that probably the real Elijah is going to show up too. But Elijah came originally to draw a line in the sand and said, "Choose now who you're going to serve."
You know, before you get too far afield of that, you know, you're talking about the feast in Rosh Hashanah, and that's the first day of the 10 days of awe, ending with Yom Kippur. Day nine is an interesting one. It's the Kol Nidre, which is the shutting of the gates of heaven.
Yes.
Now that is really kind of interesting.
The whole thing has been, I'm telling you, man, I'm jacked out of my mind, if you can't tell. I'm so excited about this. Because being in theater all my life, I can see this as a word picture. And after seeing the light show this year, I do believe we're in the tech rehearsal phase. And God is extending the time period, I think, for us to everybody get on his script, so to speak, so that we are hid in the day of trouble. That's my take on it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, the more people that could study Hebrew, even just, you don't have to be an absolute linguist, but you can go to Behrman House and get the self-teach books. And in 2 weeks, you can be reading the alphabet in Hebrew, and you can then get one of these concordances, and you can get the lexicon, the Hebrew Chaldean lexicon. And once you can do the alphabet, you can go look up any Hebrew word, break it apart, and get meanings in like cultural biases and everything on the Torah and anything written in Hebrew in there that you could never get in English, because there's not enough room to talk about it. I mean, take 35 times as much place.
Yeah, I know I've said this to L.A. before, so he's aware of this, and I think Barry is too. But one of the things we learned was that every Hebrew letter has seven meanings. And so there's a Hebrew idiom that says if every letter has seven meanings, then every word has 70. It's kind of an idiom. Well, if you take the letters that comprise the word Yeshua and read right to left, one of the meanings out of the seven, you take the meaning for each letter, can translate to the hand that destroys the establishment of the I on the back of your dollar bill. The last part I added. But, I mean, just how cool is that? I mean,
that is cool. That is cool.
It's awesome.
It is.
I know I'm taking up too much time here, so I'll cut it short. But something else that I think is really amazing, and Chuck Missler was the first one that keyed me in on this, was the meaning of names in the Bible. And
right.
He talks about the first 10 names of the patriarchs, basically Adam Noah.
Mm-hmm.
What it comes out to man is appointed mortal sorrow, but the blessed God shall come down teaching that his death shall bring the despairing rest. That's the 10 names. But I began to think, I wonder if that's true all the time. And son of a gun, if it isn't true, we start the 13 spies that go into the land. I don't have time to go into it here, but man, when you translate the names of the, because it gives three names, the name of the tribe, the name of the father, and the name of the spy. And if you take the meanings of those three and put them together as a sentence, it's amazing. And so every time I see a genealogy in the scriptures now, whoo, those are the parts we used to skip past because we couldn't pronounce them. Now it's a hidden code where God is telling you his game plan.
You know, not only that, you find that the names of the heroes in the Torah, when a name is given in Hebrew and you translate that name and break it apart into its components so you can really understand the name's meaning, you find that the story of that verse or several verses is told in the name in summary.
Exactly.
And, you know, it is amazing. It really is.
Well, that is really cool. Rob, I think we'll have to have you on again talking about Hebrew meanings, because it seems like you're finding out a lot more than what we talked about 2 months ago.
Oh, definitely.
Stan, what do you find with your group that are kind of looking at Hebrew meanings? What are new things that you're finding?
Well, I haven't done much on it in the last month. I did some research on it today, had a couple minutes, and that's what we talked about at the beginning of the show, about the Nephilim being in the earth. There's a bet, the letter B, used for in, near, toward, or something, and it can be translated, the Nephilim were on the earth in that day, or they were in the earth. And so I'm researching the scriptures for discussions about what's inside the earth, the beings that are inside the earth, and when they're coming out, and that kind of stuff we were talking about. So,
interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Very
there.
Interesting.
Hey, you know, LA, we could look at doing another thing on that down the road here if we have time, about the subterrestrials or the subterranean beings rather than the extraterrestrials.
There you go.
You missed that first part of the show, but Rob's interested in that. Dante's interested. We're all interested in hitting that.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Well, gentlemen, I want to honor your time. We got about 10 minutes. Any final thoughts from anybody?
Well, I would like to point people to a page that will help them study Hebrew. If you go to our website, standeo.com, standeo.com, and you go to a place up in the top, there's a little menu up there, and about six of them across, it says Stan's Corner. That's my corner, and that's about the only part of the website I ever touch, because Holly would shoot me otherwise. And if you go to that page, you'll see a picture of Stan, you know, a cartoon character standing in front of the pyramids and the Sphinx with his whip and his Indiana Jones look. And right underneath that, there are three words in Hebrew in gold on a blue background. And if you click on that, you're going to see how to get to Behrman House and Torah educational software and stuff, how you can learn even online how to speak it and understand it. And it's free. It just go in there and learn from that, and you can buy books from them if you want. But I encourage groups who are studying the Bible to do just like Rob's talking about, like I'm talking about, like LA, is study basic Hebrew. Don't have to be a super, you know, professor or anything like that. There's an easy way to do it. And this is a link that will help you to get started. I've had 12 families that learned to read and translate Hebrew using these Behrman House books. Okay.
Yeah, I was just looking at it. That looks really good.
How do you like that painting up the top?
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, I had that commissioned by the guy that did the front cover of my book. He's an artist down in Perth. I said, I want to see all the nations laid out when the Messiah comes with the Emerald Throne. I want to see all the nations seeing him coming in the clouds of glory. Mm. And that was how he interpreted it, and I love it. It's great work.
That is really neat. I mean, it's just bright, like Jesus coming back. It's really neat.
We did, of course, put Australia in the center. Poetic license.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
LA or Rob or Dante, any final thoughts?
Well, I gave mine already, so I don't want to suck up anybody else's time.
Okay.
Dante, you want to go?
Dante, you there?
I know he's having trouble with his internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, LA, anything that you have to say?
Well, just this, and from my perspective, you know, I blog like 6 days a week. I'm a news hound, and I'm always looking at what's going on in the Middle East. And as I said, sort of tongue-in-cheek, it's not the time of, you know, Bob, Fred, or Ernie's trouble. It's the time of Jacob's trouble. And I think that the Middle East is a game changer. I'm not sure what we're looking at. You know, Ezekiel 38, Psalm 83, Isaiah 17, a combination of all three, you know, set apart from one another. But it's coming down there. I would definitely watch the King of Jordan as the whole Palestinian thing begins to unravel. I mean, Newt Gingrich, and I don't particularly care for the man's politics, but recently he, you know, said something that no one else has ever said before. No one else has ever said. He challenged the whole Palestinian theory, which I know is a lie, that the Palestinians, you know, are a race of people. They're not a race of people. This is all, if you go back and do your homework in history, all this was invented by the Grand Mufti al-Husseini in the 20s. And the lie has been perpetuated. And so now we have this so-called Palestinian deal where you can, and I've blogged about this incessantly, Jordan is Palestine. That's what it is. They already have their nation. And everybody knows it. This whole thing is just one big ruse. And unfortunately, people play into it. It's coming down there, and it's coming down very quickly, and it's a huge game changer. It's a huge game changer. It's where everything really happens. Yeah, we're going to see signs in the heavens. Nibiru may show up. Yes, and you know, guys, I believe in this completely, that contrary to some people who are saying that there's not going to be a great falling away, and apostasia doesn't mean apostasy, it means departure. Let's say all that's true. Okay, let's just say, take for a moment, that theory is true. Okay, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Then what do we do when a 3-mile-wide mothership does show up?
That's right.
And how is that going to impact the body of Christ as a whole? And how is it that we look at all the myriad of programs and movies and television shows and books which are talking about E.T., E.T., E.T.? So with all due respect, you know, it may mean departure. Let's hope it does. But if we get 2-mile-wide ships or 3-mile-wide ships or something happens and we get that E.T. everywhere, now what? Now what? And so that's why I take umbrage with that particular theory, because all it does is it disarms everybody. We're going to get out of here. Well, we might get out of here. But if we start seeing 2-mile, 3-mile-wide ships, now what? And that will cause the great falling away. Trust me, it will.
L.A.,
Have
you been reading my Cosmic Conspiracy again? I got that big mothership parked right over the city there in one of them, and I couldn't agree with you more. We need to tell people before they arrive so that they don't think it's sour grapes. If we say, oh, no, you know, it won't work. We have to do it now before they arrive.
Stan, what's interesting about the way I think the Lord works, I never read your book before I came out with Nephilim, and you and I, you know, talked at that point, and then there was a period of time where we didn't. But and this is what happened with Doug Hamp and Stan of the Prophecy Club. You know, the three of us came up with our research, and I think that the Lord is raising up a group of men, and I think everybody here is certainly can count them. Saul's part of that group, which are trying to spread the word and warn people what is coming is unprecedented. The mystery of iniquity has been working for 2,000 years. It's not, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle, hey, Rock, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. I mean, this thing has been orchestrated, and a great amount of time and energy by the fallen one, by Satan, has gone into this thing. And when it happens, even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. So that's my 2 cents, Barry.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I really appreciate all of you. I love you guys. If the rapture happens now or whatever, I definitely want to do some things in heaven when we get up there. I really appreciate all the hard work you're doing. Stan, in your own words, as we're going out, how would you lead someone to Jesus Christ?
Well, first of all, you just have to understand that we're all sinners, every one of us, and that we can't get into the pearly gates without being clean in God's sight. And we can't do it by good works. We have to do it by accepting the fact that Jesus was born into humanity, but he was half God, half man, and that he is our doorway, our salvation, and he's taken the rap for us so that our sin is clean in God's sight, you know, the Creator, the Elohim. And I think that it is essential that above all of the preparation that you do, that you make your peace with God. Right now you can do it. You can just simply say, God, look, this is me, you know, John, and or Mary, and I understand that you died for me and that you've taken away my sins, and I accept that, and I want to be on your side. Let your Spirit fill me and guide me as you would have me do, and whatever I've got to do here to help in these last days. And certainly, don't forget me. Come get me when it's time. And I think that if you just do that, that's basically what I did one night in the middle of the Nullarbor Desert, by myself, sitting in front of the headlights, reading a book of Revelation that somebody loaned to me, and I made my peace there in the headlights that night. So it does work, and the Lord came back with blessings for me within 3 days. That there was no mistaking that His hand was on my life from that point forward, and I've never forgotten it. And I won't take up your time to share all of it now, but there were just so many miracles that happened after that that there can be no doubt in anyone's mind. He is there, and He will help you.